Hello and welcome to a brand new series of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is season 2, episode 1. I am joined here today, as always, with our host, Katerina Santos. Kate, how are you doing?
Hello, how are you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year indeed, and Happy New Year to all the folks listening today. Obviously, today is the first session of the new year. As with the new year comes a little bit of change, as you can see behind me. If you're listening on a visual format, we're in a lovely little studio, a lovely brand new studio for the podcast, which is really exciting. I'll be joined here with Kate next week as well. And as is with everything, we take a look forward in this session to the year as a whole, and we have a look at what 2026 might have in store for us in relation to data protection. Kate, how did you find the session?
Was a really good one, actually. I missed it a lot, so it's good to be back. We did spoke about so many things I was thinking about now. A lot of new guidance from the ICAO, particularly around international transfers and the SARs, being the SARs related to the DUA, but the international transfers, not yet. And then we spoke about a little bit the not materially lower than the UK law in regarding the new approach from the international transfers perspective. And then even the AI on the Grok AI case. What do you think about the session?
Yeah, I thought the session was great, as you say. I missed it a little bit. It's always nice on a Friday to sort of just get with the community. We can talk a little bit about data protection. Everyone can sort of share their gripes and problems. And, it's really glad to be back, especially in this brand new format. So really looking forward to some more sessions in the future. We've definitely got a lot lined up this year. But I thought the session was great. I think the Grok AI case in particular is a really, really interesting one. And I think, as I was mentioning, it's not a very positive one as it stands.
Not at all.
I think it's a very interesting conversation, but I do think, some serious care and diligence needs to be taken in relation to AI like that fairly pronto. But we think that is amazing, a session and the first one of the year. So we hope you can jump right in and enjoy. We're actually kicking off in the new year now, and people are ready to get reaching out, get sending stuff in, which is great. The team on the support desk is really busy, and it's looking like it's going to be a really promising year in terms of loads of new customers that we're bringing in, loads of new work as well. But it's been very busy. I've had my head in a lot of policies as of recent, and I've been doing a lot of STAIR stuff as usual. I feel like I've been talking about STAIRs now for the past 10 podcasts or something.
Well, as we will this today as well, will not be.
Yeah, probably a little bit more as well.
But yeah, we are talking about STAIRs a lot, aren't we? So, literally not even this week, even because, well, for the ones that don't know, me and Ken were the few employees working through Christmas and New Year's Eve. So we were doing a lot of work that actually we should have done for probably the past year, but we only did not have time because other urgent things came up. But one of those things, particularly on my side, was to develop like gap analysis on the DUA Act and as well on STAIRs. That was my week. I feel like now I'm on your level in terms of expertise on STAIRs because Kane is definitely our STAIRs expert. But as well, a lot of things came up, actually. And one of them that I do want to bring up is around international transfers. So I will start with the news, and then I will share with the audience my little panic attack that I had for 35 minutes.
To say the least.
Yes. So I'm not sure if you are aware, but yesterday the ICAO has published an update on his guidance on international transfers to explain a little bit further what is actually international transfer risk assessments, etc. And actually, when I saw this popping up in my email, I thought, oh, new guidance on the international transfers about the DUA Act changes. But no. So the updated guidance is just introducing a three-step test to kind of help organizations identifying restricted transfers, provide clarity on roles and responsibilities, even introduce like complex scenarios. And it has like a link to a glossary, like with relevant concepts and definitions that are relevant for international transfers. And I think it's important as well to just mention that they will have host a webinar on the 10th of March that will discuss the changes that the DUE Act will introduce and actually provide practical advice for the controllers, which I think is quite good, isn't it? Like, it's a good initiative for the ICO.
Yeah,
I think it's good.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan of it. I think they should take a little bit more, and it seems like maybe they are, into a little bit more care in sometimes explaining some of the guidance they've got out there. I think sometimes it's a little bit naff, to be honest with you. And I think we've seen it inherently, especially over the SARS stuff. And I want to talk a little bit about the new SARS guidance as well, because as much as I think there's some good things, there's a few things I'm a little bit sort of like about. As is with always with the ICO and me for some reason. but with the international transfers, I was reading the FAQs actually. I don't know if you had a chance to look through them, because I always look at them from the perspective of someone who doesn't really know much about data protection at all. And to be fair, as a basic overview, it's not bad, actually. I mean, they're very straightforward answers, which you would expect. And I have a feeling that they've only put the FAQs in there because of to increase AEO, obviously, in terms of like clicks on the stuff. I know that's one of the new changes that help get people traction on the website. So I think it's partially because of that. But I also think that's really helpful. I think hopefully the ICO will do a little bit more this year in explaining their guidance a little bit better, making it a little bit more digestible for the folk who can find the ICO stuff difficult to read and don't know a lot about data protection, because granted it's it can be a little bit difficult sometimes, I think, to digest it if you're not always in the space, especially if you're like a smaller business as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the introduction of tests, regardless if they are good or bad, that's another question, because I think the question sometimes when you try to filter, okay, let's see actually in what is the substance, like let's filter and understand if it is actually a good advice, yes or no. I think that's another question, because I do remember when they launched that, this exactly kind of the same perspective for the direct marketing, not sure if you do remember, like it was like a test, let's do your privacy notice as well, like in a very short, like simple way. But then the questions that they did on that test were completely redundant. Like there was definitely nothing in there. But I do like the initiative. I think should definitely be promoted. I think sometimes, and I have actually, and that's come with my things with international transfers, I think it's very hard, as you mentioned, to digest. I think it's too hard to common readers and sometimes even the data protection officers and practitioners to understand in practice and in a pragmatic way, was that supposed to mean? And the ICO, in my perspective, has an absolutely important role to do in that, and does not help in majority of the times, and it should.
Yeah.
But to talk about my panic attack, so about international transfers and the DUE. So we are working, and we were and are still working on a UK third country transfers project with this client, and it's part of the project to carry out a lot of transfer risk assessment. And I'm sure that's like majority of the organizations, they still, and as we are, relying on the ICO template for the transfer risk assessment. This is still the one that is available on the website today. So as I was mentioning, the understand and the guidance that is new from the international transfers perspective is about the current framework on the UK GDPR framework and not the new one that is imposed by DUE. But that's because of the transfer risk assessments and questions about with the customer that led me to, okay, let's read the DUE and reread exactly what will be the amendments that the DUE introduced to international transfer. And to be honest, as you know, Cain, I spend a good hour to understand and try to work out what is actually enforced, what it isn't, and when this will be enforced. And as we know, I think now will be a lot of problems that I kind of identified. So as we know, the DUE Act is like implemented in phases. Some of the provisions were already implemented in 2025, even in the smaller ones, but others are expected to be throughout this year. And I feel quite interesting the fact that they say they will be implemented by the end of winter, by the end of summer, or by during the summer. So it's not even specific month-wise, but kind of times in the year. But fair enough, because I do appreciate that they cannot have specific deadlines, because if they don't comply with them, people will just going with them. But anyway, once I think it's once you get into the detail of understanding the phases and when questions with our customers, that I'm sure that you face it a lot in support desk as well, is this already implemented or when will it be implemented? It's really surprisingly hard to tell exactly what is live, what is effective, what is implemented,
really
what will be. It's very difficult.
Yeah, I like feel like I was struggling with that.
Yeah, there is a link that is provided by the gov.uk that states literally all the sections, all the provisions, and make the point of when.
Yeah.
But there's even like when you try to understand the when, there is no when, is it?
It's like the commencement something, isn't it?
Yes.
And obviously, I know you're ringing me in a panic about the international transfers stuff, and I was scouring, and I found it quite difficult to find, which is, I don't know if similar, I feel like, In certain respects, I hear less and less about Doer as the days pass.
Yeah.
I look at that actually, and I feel like because we're not hearing too much. Obviously, we've had the floating of the consultations have happened for a lot of elements already, and we've seen some decent stuff with the charitable opt-in guidance was actually really good, and I was quite happy with that. But just yet to get some real oomph so far, and I feel like because of it a lot of people are kind of pushing it to the back of their minds, I imagine. But yeah, I agree, I'm finding it really difficult to actually keep updated with what's going on at the
with
moment
actually because, the dues, isn't it? Because even if you go to the due act, what it comes up and is what now my panic started as real is it says in the section, as you mentioned, there are a few sections that will be approved in the future. So it says, well, this is provisional, it's not even still implemented. But on this specific case, articles 45A and 45B, that is the one that introduced this new data protection test that kind of switched to not material lower than the UK law instead of equivalent. And it says, and there is a, in the end of that section, there is a line that says, and I quote, Schedule 7, paragraph 4, where these 45A, 45B are included, are enforced from royal assent, but only for specified purpose with a reference to section 142 from the Act, etc. And then we try to click the link and it does not work. But well, anyway, I started to kind of try to figure it out what is actually happening. And finally, I got the answer. And those articles, yes, they are effective. Yes, they are implemented. But the main purpose of the 45A and then subsequently of 45B, that is the test, is that they just grant powers finally to the Secretary of State and then the regulators to prepare the regulations, to decide on what is or not material lower, when this will be applied and issue guidance, etc. So that means that but until there's something actually effective and the Secretary of State and the government comes up with the proper regulation, is that Chapter 5 is still applicable. So that was a panic attack involved. But then that led me to the main question, that is, what does actually not material lower actually mean in practice? Because I think it's like my first thought, and when I read like the provisions and stuff, I just came to a point that is a more pragmatic, kind of a switch between a theoretical to more pragmatic. But I'm not sure, it's like instead of asking whether something is like most identical with the UK law, is more, is this actually matters in a pragmatic and will matters to the data and the people involved? Is this actually a real risk or is just something that we identify as a risk? But don't you think that this can actually bring certain risks as well if people... Because you are doing the data protection test is based on judgment more than anything else. And if anyone states, oh, this actually is minor or is this convenient, so it's not a real risk, so we will not address it. I think this probably will bring new risks, this new kind of test.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible. I think the changing of the word in it, enters a little bit of wiggle room there, doesn't it? In sort of determining certain factors surrounding it, and I don't really know how to feel about it as of current. I was sat initially and just thought, it is essentially saying the same thing, but I think when you think about it a little bit more, and you can now take the perspective of, obviously you'd still mirroring up to the GDPR as you would with a TRA,
yeah,
but then the ball is in the court to make a decision on the risks imposed of that. You know, depending on who's completing that TRA, a lot of risks could very possibly be overlooked, and it does open a door for other elements of the law to creep in.
And just keep even proper like review of the, because one what we do like transfer risk assessments completion or just reviewing, one of the things that was the first thing I learned when I joined DPP and reviewing DPIA transfer risk assessments were about the surveillance laws. And I think like if you think that like that, well, but probably not now with Trump, etc. But anyway, that in principle is a very, very unlikely to happen because the individuals in principle involved were not. So
yeah,
that potential will
Pfizer
be
was mentioned
out.
All the time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
I was always, I appreciate it is a risk, and within risk it is important to also cover the unlikely as well as the likely. But you know, the chances that is going to happen to a housing association in like Stoke or something, as a
Exactly.
random example, is pretty remote. But I think it's important to be diligent. But obviously, that was a real blocker between that and the adequacy decision as well, wasn't it? So, allegedly, as well as some other things. But I think it's interesting. I think only time will tell how people will adopt the approach. I think people will still hold a similar approach and be quite
I really,
diligent.
yeah.
I do think international transfers is a place where practitioners in particular are really diligent, because I think they really sense the importance in it, and especially the ramifications of potential risks there, because that is, you know, it could be absolutely massive. So I'm confident. I think that most practitioners will be able to, and we'll still probably act in a similar vein, but it does kind of open that door for a little bit of cheekiness,
Like
I
a little bit
guess.
cheeky, yeah.
Yeah.
Like let's see if it goes through. Just like okay, I'm really ready now. I'm really, really ready. Sorry for my English. Sometimes when I spend too much time in Portugal, just English just goes. So sorry if you don't understand sometimes, but I feel that sometimes that we will need to be ready for reviewing transfer risk assessments with this new not material lower and be like, yeah, this will not be applicable. So why are you including this? Stop being so conservative. Stop it.
So we need to update templates really on everybody's side, don't we? You know, us and customers alike. I suppose also in the realm of updated guidance at the moment, we also received the updated STAS. I mean, it really is on the brain at the moment,
I
isn't it?
Told you.
The updated SARS guidance. So we've had a few clarifications in relation to the DUA and some of the changes that have spanned from it. There's a couple of them that have come out, and I think a lot of them, you know, make sense. Namely, data subjects must be notified of their right to make a complaint to the controller. I think that's fairly standard now, as in a lot of communication, and something I'm already seeing implemented anyway. And having that point of elevation first, and I think a lot of times for SARS in practice, it was kind of already there. You know, even if it's just an internal review, it was worded it. I always think sometimes I see that exist on. I mean, it probably didn't like all across the board, but I did see it quite often. But now that obviously is something that must be in place, but specifically when refusing a request. And then we had stuff like the volume of data you could determine then if it's unreasonable or disproportionate, which I think
that's
is
quite good, isn't it?
I think it is good. You know, I think we might get onto it if we have a little bit of time. I think at the moment with how AI and SARS are intertwining themselves at the moment, and the sheer volume and pushback seemingly that organizations are facing now from they're effectively arguing with an AI chatbot, really, who is going to find any sort of reason to disprove something or really stretch out the scope of a request and make it as, you know, as really arduous as possible. But so I think that is a welcome change. But it obviously does mean that you just need to be trying to reduce the scope as opposed to refusing. Obviously, we don't want to shut out that right entirely. But I do think broadly the formulaic sort of SAR responses, it doesn't really matter from my experience how well you write something or how clearly you make a decision. The response it always comes back is quite combative.
We'll always be a complaint about that.
Yeah,
it is.
It's a much broader problem. AI with SARS at the moment, and I know that in particular, some of our customers are really swimming in it at the moment. Just receiving so many SARs, and they get so many pushback from SARs now. And, really, really, really granular complaints on elements that, are pretty open and shut. But it's a lot of resource and time that goes into responding to these. And I think, when we're looking sort of forward into 2026, what I think is, I think. I mean, I think we're going to see a massive, massive influx of SARs because we have already, and I can only see that maybe increasing for the time being, especially the amounts of the more ways people use AI. I think I've seen cases where people have been running AI through the redactions to basically pick apart at that granular of a level. Do you put the whole SAR into AI, and that, that in itself is really, really stress inducing for controllers who are really just trying to exercise an individual's right as best they can. But how far do you go in fighting these battles with,
I agree.
Mr. ChatGPT and stuff like that? It's, you know,
I
it's,
completely agree.
it, it, it's, it feels pretty intense at the moment, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, myself and Kane, actually, with Miles as well, we did have a conversation this week with a future guest speaker, and we touched a little bit about this, how SARs actually, in the past few years, and particularly 2025 and potentially future now as well, the SARs currently are just being weaponized. Like, it's always attached with something else. It's not just the exercise of the right itself, per se, is always attached with a complaint or disrespect claim or anything else coming through a grievance or disciplinary process, etc. And I feel with the DUA, I do have some reservations, as always, with majority of the provisions of DUA, but actually on the SAR perspective, I really do think, even if big changes were already part of guidance, I think the fact that now our law, which means that automatically abiding, I think we'll try to kind of switch a little bit the reality. And I think it was the government already preparing itself for this increasement of SARs. And one thing that you touched, and I came across so many times now, is all the SARs that I receive. I do manage a couple of data protection inboxes from customers of mine, and I do manage the SARs, everything, the processes they want till the last day. And all the requests are ChatGPT, all of it.
100%.
So
Yeah,
I could
100%.
identify like the lines and the paragraphs and the bolds and the massive spaces between the sentences, and is how, I mean, is it balances, isn't it? That's why I always say it's such a nice topic, I do think, because is a balance between a right of individual, but as well so many other nuances,
Also, the
isn't it?
resource
And
on the controller, and I think I think we're going to reach a point where controllers are, and what I'm recommending at the moment, which doesn't really go down too well because then you just kind of get hounded by emails. What I'm finding is less and less people are going to the commissioner about their complaints and just continuously berating the organization until, even if they've mentioned this is their final response and go to the ICO for escalation, it's still like hammering down their points in real scrutiny. And I think at the moment there's an art of knowing when to cut down these conversations and when you want to be as helpful as you can, and I really appreciate that, but it seems to be more and more difficult. And I can definitely see that for housing this year as well. I think a lot of obviously resources is going to go into responding to stairs requests now as well. And all at the moment, the main thing I can probably see this tie into is just more and more requests that are broadly trying to cover everything, and you've got people trying to make stairs requests for things way out of scope, or if they're getting a
Absolutely.
SAR that they don't want, it's then linking to the stairs request. And I think in particular, housing associations this year need to be really, really diligent in how they communicate with the tenants in relation to all their rights, stairs, SARs, even in some of the complaint elements as well, because I think it's only just another tool at the moment, and I think
Absolutely.
it's got to come with having really strong templated responses, really strong, like rigid processes in
Processes
how
in
you
place and
handle
like
these
separating.
requests. Exactly. And just having a real good support network to assist with all of these elements, because it would be great if I could have a direct solution. But I think at the moment, as AI is prevalent, it's really difficult to cut down, because you can't refuse them. The right is the right, and it does exist whether they use ChatGPT or not. But I think the only real way to help the burden as much as you can is really putting emphasis on those processes, and even making sure in your procedure, maybe you have a structure on how and when you actually respond to data subjects. So we'll go through a three sort of pronged approach in terms of handling a SAR and a complaint in relation to that SAR, whether that's an internal review, and then responding to the complaint, and then responding to the complaint again, and then cutting that off as final and treating that as final, and then hopefully waiting for ICO escalation. But I must admit, I think you'd be waiting a long time for that. I was getting emails the other day from the ICO that was informing me of a breach that I notified to them in January that same year, and they thought it was prudent to drop me an email in December. So it's a whole 12 months. And it was like, we presume because of all this time, you've put mitigating measures in place. It's like, well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, cheers, after all that time, for your continuous support.
Yeah. But obviously, that's seemingly a problem right now. And I don't know how much, I don't know your opinion, Kate, but obviously their complaints responses and the response in relation to breaches and SARs was obviously a lot slower for the ICO because of the uptick of complaints they're getting. Do you think that's something the ICO are going to be able to combat? I mean, because I do imagine they get a lot, you know, to cut them a little bit of slack. I'm sure they get a lot.
I do. I to be honest, with my experience with actually SARs and breaches and everything, I do appreciate that on one side, individuals have the right to complain to the ICO, definitely, and do have, the ICO is definitely the supervisor authority, and not everyone should have the means to look for a consultant and to look for advice, which means that then we have two options before it goes actually to the ICO. Or the guidance that we just made the point that is not sometimes is the best. And David mentioned definitely the ICO is one of the supervised authorities that actually issued more guidance. That's a fact. And I mean, the Portuguese one is completely inexistent. Just
the
for
EDP,
a matter of fact,
EDPB has
awful.
Some really good stuff though, doesn't it?
But the ICO is very active actually.
No, they really are. I think we're a bit hard on them sometimes, to be fair. But some of the EDP guidance I really like. They do one in terms of like, well, one of the things I really found helpful is they wrote something on controllership, which I found really, really useful. It's super detailed in like really going in the hammer into how we determine a control. I thought it was
That's
great.
The Spanish one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes,
I think it is. The McNeil one, the French one, is really good. I really, really like
they're
it.
They're active with enforcement.
They are very
they?
Active. Yeah.
They're pretty
and
on
they
the ball
like,
with enforcement.
And they actually like, it seems like sometimes they write guidance as they write a book, but it's such a nice way to put things out. It's really good. But that was, as mentioned, like people go to the ICO guidance or go to ChatGPT. That's what we're seeing. And to be honest, I think every single time advice that would come from solicitors and like even controllers, they are not aware. They just, or the organizations go directly to the ICO because, okay, just for cautious. I'm not sure about this data breach. It seems like to me low risk, but let's just be clear and accountability purposes, evidence. And on the other hand, we have individuals that they don't see their right to actually be exercised in a way they think they should. So they go to the ICO. And I feel that is happening to absolutely millions of people, particularly if you have a ChatGPT saying, yes, you should go to the ICO regardless. Solicitors saying the same. And
I would probably never go to ChatGPT about a breach, honestly. We work on likelihood, don't we? And ChatGPT is going to reach probably far in the realms. I wouldn't use it for, of course, it sounds like I'm saying something really silly, but using it for legal advice in general. Obviously, I know that there was that case recently of the lawyer going in trouble for using ChatGPT, didn't he? But I had a full-on argument with ChatGPT once because I was doing some work for somebody. I was helping somebody, and there was, I think, I don't know where it had come from, but somewhere had said that there was an exemption in a part of the Data Protection Act. And I went there. I was like, I know what exemption you're referencing loosely, but it's not there, what you're
definitely
saying.
That
section
that
actually doesn't exist. So I asked ChatGPT and I said, what is this? What is in this section of the DPA? And it told me, it mirrored it exactly. And I was like, well, you're wrong, actually. I was like, it's here. It's in this section instead. I was getting quite aggravated, actually, because it responds back and it's like, oh, no, you're right, actually. Oh, that you're right.
You.
It was something like that. It's like, you're right, with an exclamation mark. I was like, honestly. I was getting quite frustrated, but
And
yeah, it's just one of
yeah, I
those
mean, and
things at the
people are just
moment.
relying on this all the time, and it's just frustrating
It's a
because I
problem, isn't
do,
it?
yeah, I do appreciate that. And to be honest, and I think that will lead us to the other AI problems because I mean, AI is definitely if the title of this, your the year ahead, what really actually matters in 2026, and if I need to kind of aside from the stairs, if I need to point something out will be AI and the use of edge AI. I think the 2025 year, it was just data breaches, cybersecurity things, and AI with images, deepfakes, etc. And I think with this Grok AI situation, it's
Yeah,
definitely not different, is it?
it is
Mm-mm.
horribly, it's a horribly drab situation, and I think it's horrendous, honestly. I really do. To have AI on a social media platform in such an unregulated state,
Yeah.
to quite frankly, I think it's I mean, I know you put it in the hands of the people, and I guess it's the people that have been using it in the way that it has been. But I think it's really dangerous, and I think it's a little bit disgusting, to be honest with
Well,
you.
absolutely. You made that point at the comment before. It's like, you know what? I know that probably is not very professional, but you are absolutely right. It's disgusting. Like, there is
Yeah.
no other way to describe this. So, for the people that don't know, so Grok is like an image tool that is connected to the X, so the X Twitter, and currently is being all over the news and apparently has been used to create a non-consensual sexual images of women and girls. And this unfortunately came up as a massive, even bigger problem because it involved children. So they came up with real images from with their faces, but then the bodies were developed bodies, sexualized, objectified bodies in bikinis or even naked, and they were caught out in other social media platforms and dark webs and telegrams groups, pedophiles groups and stuff. So this has been a massive problem
And
by obviously real reasons.
as much as there is controls in place, should I say. I mean, you do have to verify your age as a minimum, and you have to click onto it knowing that it's going to be showing sexual content. But is that, first and foremost, is Twitter really the place for that? Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And you can control the Twitter. Twitter is a space as much as you want, but it can so easily get outside of that, just because only one person really needs access to it, and then there you go. Where else is it? These things are very easy to share around outside of Twitter as well. And I do think
Absolutely.
it's a really dangerous and maybe slightly like an intentional application of Grok to be used in, maybe not in the specific way, but in an effort to drag people to X as a platform. I just think it's really problematic, and obviously
Is
there's nothing we can do as practitioners, but if you look at it from every perspective of the principles, if we to
it
tie it back
all
to data
wrong?
protection, could you meet a single one of them really if you tried?
I mean,
It,
it's all wrong. It's all wrong. It's just
yeah.
it's made me so uncomfortable. And to be honest, what made me more uncomfortable, we wrote actually an article about this week, and what's like a lot of questions came up with me because. So Ofcom is already involved because of they are carrying out an investigation because of Online Safety Act that obviously is preventing the harm online. And actually the principles are specifically for children and women. And then the other one is the ICO that they came up with, they issued a public statement and I quote, saying that the people have a right to use social media knowing their personal data is being handled lawfully and with respect. And they apparently came up where they come, they went to the X and asked for what are the security measures implemented to protect the rights and freedoms of the individuals. And they made the point that potentially actions will be needed after they receive a response. And apparently X came back and in response to the pressure, they said, and this completely just, they have restricted the Grok's image tool to only paying subscribers. That so they will be using
Right.
only the
Okay.
paying subscribers. So well, as I'm sure from your face that is definitely on your mind as well. Like,
Yeah.
question number one, what
Well,
do you mean
what
about
truly
paying
baffling
subscribers?
decision. Do they really need it? Like, what is the provision of this AI, this Grok actually doing for Twitter? I don't know. I don't, and I couldn't even pretend that I did. But I'm sure there is probably a reason. It's got to be a money generator somehow for them.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, absolutely. Like,
But
that surely
basically,
there's something.
they're saying that they're basically they're still lock. Yes, they're locking out harmful content behind a paywall, but why have that harmful content out there? Like, what does that promote about X as a social media platform? And I presume it still doesn't stop them from
It
using
doesn't.
images of other people
Of course not, because
who aren't paying for this AI.
but don't you think as well that, like, the question that automatically came to my mind, because obviously if the ICO, I mean, it's clear that even if it's like a online generated image, body wise, the face is still real. The face is still children or any
Absolutely.
other individual. So that means that automatically the UK GDPR, et cetera, applies, or the data protection law itself. Anyway, so my question is, how are we thinking about this now? So how can we thinking about, because this is trend, isn't it? Because I can see from the news, and I was doing some digging, and it's always like, oh, this happened, so the ICO Ofcom, et cetera, came up, asked the questions, and now the actions are being needed, et cetera. But should not this being like the research and everything before? That's why the DPIAs actually exist, or any kind of similar tools.
I'd
So
like to
like
see
risk
one
assess.
if they've done one.
Like,
If they
of
have.
course, like, how can we not prevent, how can we just reactive to consequences of something that happened? Because one thing is me delivering something to you as a paper, and oh, sorry, that was a mistake, please just throw up, it's fine. Online, everyone knows that even if you delete something, it's already spreaded. You can't delete anything online wise, ever, ever. So this is a massive problem, I think.
I agree, and hopefully in the future we'll hear some news in relation to Ofcom and the
Yeah.
ICO as well in terms of how they're going to combat that. Now, mindful that we're towards the end of the session now, it'd be nice, Kate, to get your sort of final thoughts on what you think 2026 is going to mean in relation to data protection, in relation to the space, and if there's anything that you expect to see or you'd like to see. Because then we can look at it retrospectively once again when we get to the end of the year.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true, actually. So I think 2025 was a lot of provision-wise and regulation-wise, particularly the DUO, was a lot of discussion about it. Finally, as well, had the UK extension from the EU-UK, 27th of December. I was actually very scared of that, you know. But I think 2026 will be a year of implementation, actually. We will have the latest stages of the DUO. So I'm keen to see how the DUO will actually promote the growth of economic and the relief and flexibility of the process for controllers and facilitate their lives. Will be a big year as well for STES. The first phase will be implemented in October 2026. So I'm quite keen to see. So a lot of preparation until then. And I would say finally, as we touch a little bit, increase of SaaS and probably a good look into AI, I think. What about you?
I think it's about time. I definitely see some waves being made in the AI space. I think that's a given. And hopefully, we can. We can get a little bit more regulation behind it and the use of it, but obviously it's quite limited and what I know on that currently, and I'm hoping and it's seeming definite that this year my skills and knowledge in relation to AI should grow exponentially. You and I both, Katerina, which is quite exciting. I do expect an uptick in SARS. I expect an uptick. Well, I expect STAIRS to be relatively prevalent. I think maybe not off the
That's
bat.
exciting,
I
isn't
think we'll get there
it?
eventually. Yeah, obviously for in mention of STAIRS, obviously, of course, most people may know that we have our STAIRS event on the 5th of February, in person in Leeds, near Leeds train station.
Yeah,
I
there's
believe
still some tickets,
there's a
aren't they?
few tickets left,
Yeah,
not
so please
many at
join us.
all. But the event is going to be recorded, but if we can still gain some more interest on that, you know, we'd be willing to do more sessions also across the UK, and we'll be hosting a lot more internal sessions as well in-house, hopefully for all you guys. So if you guys don't mind me and Kate sort of sitting and moaning at you every now and then, you can hopefully see us do that in person as well, which is you know, which is maybe also ideal. We'll also be having a lot more guests to talk to as well, to sort of break up and give you some new faces. But I'm looking forward to 2026. I'm quietly optimistic about the year for data protection. I'm hoping it's the year that people are gonna be even more serious about it. I feel like we're moving in that direction, and I'm excited to see where it's gonna go. But I think that will be all for today. Seems like it
That's
anyway. Unless you have,
a good end note, I think. That's a
I
good
think
end
so.
note for
A
the
little bit of
episode, like
positivity.
inspirational. And yeah, we will see in December 2026 how frustrated
Yeah.
we will be.
Probably a lost half in the air or something.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. Well, thank you so much, all of you, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday, and we'll see you in the next one. So far it's a GDPR radio session, but if it is something else, obviously we'll let you know in due course. We hope you all have a lovely weekend, and we'll see you later.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Ta-ra.